move and adapt with the market. Ultimately, we're underbuilt. I still believe that. And I cannot stop now just because spring hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm. Which it did. It hurt a lot of people's feelings.
It did.
This
hurt me. Yeah. This has not been, I'm used to, you know, wind at my sails, and this has been wind at my sails, right? And it's just been, it's been gratifying to know that I can adapt in this market. The company can be solvent and company can be thriving, even in a year where almost every housing headline was negative.
Yeah.
And we can still do it. And just zig and zag.
Ever wonder what really happens behind the scenes in construction, real estate, and development? We pull back the curtain on the new home construction industry, the real estate market, and the trends shaping it all. Discover the stories, insights, and expertise behind the process of building a new home. Join us for Trust the Process podcast, and let's build something great together. Welcome back to Trust the Process, a podcast where we talk about new home construction, the new home industry, real estate, and everything in between. We're going to do a little wrap-up today. It's been a while since we did a market climate, just kind of check the pulse of what's happening out in the industry, the real estate market, the new home market, Las Vegas, nationally, kind of looking at everything. I know we did the Q1 wrap-up, but we didn't do anything mid-year. So kind of have a little moment, and we'll jump back in and see how things are ending up for us as we wrap up Q3, entering into the fourth quarter of 2025. What's it look like? Where have we been? Kind of fun to look back to our Q1 and see some of those things that we were anticipating for the year. And have we hit them? Did we hit them? Are we on track for those? Obviously, we have a whole nother quarter, and who knows what could happen, because things do change quickly. But I think we have a pretty good pulse on what's happening in the market and where the trends are headed. So you want to jump in on that, Michael? I know we've got some good stats, and there's a lot of information available to us, which is nice, because you can really, you know, have the facts to lean into, and then you and I can look at how and why and how it's affecting our clients and our industry or our business specifically. So I'll let you go.
All right. Well, when you said we missed the Q2, there probably wasn't much to talk about.
That's true. That's why we did. Yeah. So
yeah,
we didn't
just
stop to jump in on it. Yeah.
It was just a whole lot of nothing. I mean, don't get me wrong. We had come off of, I would say, probably 4 years worth of atrocious inventory levels, unsustainable price appreciation. So I guess 100%. The news would have been modulation in that. But I feel like that's probably more in line with what was happening in 2024 already. And I just think that, you know, when you're in cruising altitude and then you hear the engine cut and then you just know, okay, we're going to start to descend. I feel like we were at 35,000 feet.
Happening.
Something's happening. Okay.
Yeah.
But fasten your seatbelt, and I can't get any more wine. you kind of feel by yourself. So you hear the engine cut. And I felt like, you know, midway through last year, it was really Q3, Q4 last year, I felt the engine cut, right? And there was only so much low inventory could do to help us out of that. And then what happened was low inventory started to not become an issue by January, February, March, and by spring. So quarter two, which we should have done a quarter two wrap up, maybe end of June, early July. It was bad. I mean, in terms of it just corrected way too quickly. And then once people smelled blood in the water, investors had tenants leave and people saw more homes, it kind of became this, at least in Las Vegas. But you look at we were a great microcosm for most of the Sun Belt. It happened almost everywhere. We were not affected by insurance issues like wildfires, floods, things like that. But we still saw an overall pullback from the Sun Belt. So, you know, we were a great microcosm for that in Las Vegas. And I look at what happened here. Obviously, we're fine and we still had a pretty healthy first three quarters. But it's not been for want of hard work. It's, you know, we've definitely had to work for those numbers. I feel like buyers are apprehensive. And then inventory breeds inventory. So as people started to feel like, oh, can we really sustain these sales prices? Maybe we should sell now. My tenant's leaving, whatever. We got relocated and We move somewhere and decide not to buy because the market is challenged. So they become a renter. So that's now a person that left a house in another market and is now renting a house. Couple that gets divorced, they both just decide to rent because the market's kind of unstable. So I felt like we had a net loss of buyers putting their moves on or purchases on hold, but maybe not putting their moves on hold. So you'd had all this inventory. Then as inventory picks up, the lock-in effect has started to wear thin. So that lock-in effect, you know, are people with sub 4.5 mortgage rates where they're just kind of locked into their houses. That can only last for so long for everybody. I mean, in numbers, I'm not, you know, not everybody's going to move, but the average person moves about every 5.5 years. So let's say that pushes out to 7 or 8. That's not going to be 10. That's not going to be 12 years. Eventually people have to move. And even if it's locally, and then they get tempted by these beautiful homes that are now hitting the market. Builders finally caught up with demand. So there's a lot of sexy looking new home inventory that may have rate buy downs. And it's okay, well, I don't even have to give up my rate. You know, I'm going from a 3 to a 4.5, but at least I'm going to 6.5 or 7. So, okay, we'll buy that new luxury home. Unfortunately, it's not been one of ours, but we'll buy that new luxury home with a rate buy down. But now they have their home to sell. And we have a situation on one of our inventory homes in Lake Las Vegas where they have a home in Seattle to sell that has been on the market for 120 something days with 4 showings. And that's a good market. Seattle's a pretty, you know, generally speaking, is a pretty robust real estate market. They're kind of an exurb, but still, it's a new construction home from 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, it was growing enough at that point 5 years ago for Lennar to do a 1,000-home subdivision. So, you know, it just shows you how much their market's cooled, which is now having knock-on effects into our market, because I would have sold one of my homes, had their home under contract. And we would have probably done some sort of rate buy down or whatever to get the deal done. But it just shows you that inventory breeds inventory, right? If they have a home to buy in Las Vegas, now there's a home to sell in Seattle. Okay, now that home that would have been locked up. It just shows you that the market is not as static as you think, and it can change pretty quickly. That being said, it can change in the opposite too. When it feels static, that we're kind of frozen and buyers and sellers are at a stalemate, we're already seeing that kind of start to thaw. Seller's market pushes people out who don't absolutely have to buy. Buyer's market pushes sellers out who don't absolutely have to sell. And therefore, real estate markets equilibrate. They just naturally do, like all markets, because homes do not expire the way produce expires. Homes do not need to be thrown out like yesterday's steak at a restaurant to say, well, we can't serve this now. They're non-fungible. They can't be recreated. They can't be moved generally. So that's the staticness. And then all it takes in growing Sunbelt markets is for builders to say, let's just pull back on our housing starts and see what happens in 90 days. The tonnage builders can create inventory so quickly because they have a pipeline of lots that they're working on. The subdivisions we're working on today are 26 and 27, maybe even 28 deliveries. It shows you that, you know, if you had 20 years of pipeline and the capital behind you to keep pushing new lots into that pipeline, you get to a point where, let's just pretend we're a year down the road and our Westridge subdivision is fully approved, ready to go. The carrying costs for me are so minuscule compared to just building up the neighborhood and it not being successful. I could just stall 3 months and then reevaluate the market and say, okay, or instead of doing all 5, I'll do 2 of them. And then I'll do the other 2. I'll kind of stagger it out a little more. So if someone's trying to call the bluff, the builders will call your bluff, right? They'll just say, oh, if you don't want to buy our houses, we're not going to give them away. Yeah, we have all these starts, like some of our stuff in Lake Las Vegas. Yeah, I have the starts. And those that are nearly done, I'm going to have to wheel and deal if I want to move that inventory. I'm not going to have to wheel and deal on all of them because maybe out of the 4, I only have to sell 2 of them. I can be a little bit more discerning with the other 2, buy myself some time and some runway. That being said, we purchased 2 more lots out there. So then I'll slow roll the development process. I won't slow roll the HOA approval, the building department, all the engineering architectural. I want that done. But those approvals are good for months. HOA approval is good for years, I think 2 years. City building, I just have to call in one inspection in 6 months and my permit's still valid. So I can really slow roll houses. And I'm a tiny little builder, right? We're small. Imagine if you're D.R. Horton, who's putting in, I would imagine, probably 2,000 units into the ground a year. Lennar, another 1,800 to 2,000. So imagine they pull back just 10% or 20%. It's a lot. It will really affect the inventory situation down the road. They're in some neighborhoods now that they can't, I don't want to say they can't give them away, but you know, they're really having a wheel and deal in otherwise great zip codes. Thinking
and
about the
every
most...
builder has inventory right now. I mean, exactly. Every builder valley-wide is carrying some sort of inventory that they had probably anticipated selling by now, including
yes.
us, I would
We're
say.
There. We're with them.
Yeah.
Pull back the curtain. We're not too proud to say that.
Yeah.
Right? They definitely have more than they want. And even in some of the poshest zip codes, I mean, those are the last ones they really have to worry about. But there are anecdotal stories where some of these gray zip codes have new homes sitting with no buyers, completely done. And that is something completely anathema to what we're used to. So we've had 5 to 7 years of, oh, there's actually inventory. Wow, that's crazy.
Right. Inventory's up 77% year over year from 2024, this same ending out Q3.
Right.
So we're 77% over the inventory that was
we've
so tight last
doubled.
Year.
Right.
That's crazy.
Now, that
that's
being said,
crazy.
We're still not even near our 17 or 18 or 19 levels. So it shows you how under inventoried we were. But you just wonder, were those really high price, you know, sales prices propped up by that chronically low inventory? So we are in that stalemate right now, or we are in that period where the pendulum keeps swinging back and forth and we don't exactly know where we're going to land. And markets hate uncertainty. So that's why the market feels a little frozen. I don't follow pending sales weekly in the U.S. the way that I do locally, but we're generally still pending out about 500 to 700 MLS sales. Now, some new construction finds its way into the MLS. For instance, all of our new construction, all of our inventory homes do hit the MLS before they go under contract. Every single one of them has always been in the MLS. It's the broker in me that's like, let's just get it out to as many people. Depending on when that is, of course, contingent on what kind of home it is and what our strategy is with that property. But everything we have hits the MLS. That's not the case with every single builder. Many of them, if they sell one of their lots within their tracks, that will never hit the MLS. Some of the spec inventory sits on a backlog and they don't even broadcast it because they don't want to flood the market. They don't want to flood the zone and make it look like that neighborhood has so much available inventory. They'll just slow roll it and trickle it out. They'll release, you know, especially the big tonnage builders, the Lennars and the D.R. Hortons. They have 15 of one model and there's only three models. You know, if they have 45 houses and 15 of each model, they're not going to have all 15 available even on the agent's sheet. They're just going to say, oh, here's five. So that being said, we're still pending out about 700. When one of those backlog homes goes under contract, that doesn't get reflected on there at all. It gets reflected in the yearly numbers for the builder. So that's kind of really hard to track weekly, but I can tell you that our weekly resale or MLS data is holding up. It just feels slow. And I think it's a function of the inventory situation. So we've kept our buyers pretty much static. A buyer activity is down a little bit, don't get me wrong. But we've kept the buyer variable has pretty much stayed the same. And the inventory has gone up substantially. And I don't know which one is going to cave. Markets are constantly equilibrating. And in growth markets, Sunbelt markets, builders have a really outsized influence in that kind of balancing. So if you look at a city like Las Vegas, D.R. Horton and Lennar probably make up about 40% between the two of them, you know, put together, probably 40 to 50% of all new inventory that's, you know, for sale inventory comes from two builders, and there's still Toll and Pulte and KB, and they're also juggernauts as well. But if you look at just those two tonnage builders that kind of just build addresses, that's kind of how I look at it. You know, nothing super special about their homes and a lot of customization. You're basically buying a resale that doesn't need anything except a backyard versus, you know, like a Toll is kind of a lifestyle they're selling. The KB is customization for the lower, you know, I don't say lower the price points because they still built some expensive homes, but they're definitely, you know, closer to the median sales price. Pulte's kind of somewhere in between those two and definitely has a much wider product offering, at least in our market. So anyway, long story short, you look at those two builders, if they pull back just 10% on their housing starts, that is a huge impact. It has a huge impact on our housing market and the balancing of that housing market. And in some ways, builders have propped up our housing market, because they are publicly traded entities. They're fiduciaries to the shareholder. I would say, minus us and a couple of other small companies, all the home builders in Las Vegas are publicly traded, because the ones that weren't have been acquired. Storybooks and the American West, they've been acquired. Signature sold quite a few. They're now all publicly traded. So they live quarter to quarter. If they didn't have a good quarter in Las Vegas, they're not going to add inventory to Las Vegas. They don't think long term, and they want to return value to their shareholders more than they care about for creating affordable housing. So
Yeah, and they have a national bandwidth that allows them to pick and choose which markets they want to amp up and which ones they need to, you know,
the Northeast,
rev up, you know, whatever they need to do.
You know, we basked in the glow post pandemic. This whole Sunbelt did for 5 years, and it's not till this year that the Northeast really pulled ahead of the Sunbelt in terms of sales. And you go to outside of Philly, you go Long Island, you go to those areas in the greater, you know, metro tri-state area, they're doing pretty well. Those markets have not seen the price appreciation that we see and that we've seen in the Sun Belt, and they're kind of having their little moment right now. Especially the denser cities, they don't have as much new construction, you know, to begin with. So as the return to work and kind of the cities are cool again, it's going to have that upward pressure. But even the whole corridor is doing much better than it had been. So we all have our little moments, and that's a good point. Pulte builds in PA and New York and Delaware. They build all over. KB, not as much over there, but there's a lot of presence with those builders in those markets. They can say, you know what, Las Vegas, Phoenix, kind of overbuilt. Let's just get through that inventory, hold back on some of our lots, and focus on the other markets that are doing well. And that's what forces us to balance again. So I don't worry too much about it. And we definitely have a lot of exposure. We're in the kind of entry-level luxury that maybe many people's first step up into luxury, that $1.8 to $2.2 million buyer. 50% of them, 60% of them still need loans, so they're still a little rate sensitive. And we can't play as many games. We can't buy forward commitments the way that the big builders can and lock people into 30-year fixes at 5%. I can do temporary buy-downs. I can buy their rate down maybe a point, but I can't get it from 6.5 to 4 or 4.5 or 5. I can get it from 6.5 to 6, and that's going to cost me a ton of money on these sales prices. So there's not as many strings that I can pull, but I also don't have as much inventory to move, and our inventory is more unique, and we don't have to make apologies as much as maybe a Lennar does. They've got 15 homes that all back the busy street. The other 65 homes in the tract are going to be fine, but those 15, they got a lot to apologize for, and they got to get that inventory moving. So we don't really have anything like that, thankfully, and kind of can curate our lots and curate our inventory a little bit more carefully. So that, you know, gives me some solace. Beyond that, the raw numbers, we've seen a little bit of price moderation, a little bit of price declines, but that's also very hard to track because homes are not movable, not fungible. No two homes are the same, especially as they get older. No two homes were maintained the same, upgraded the same, new construction in the same track. There's a little bit more apples to apples comparison there. But for the most part, homes are not easy to compare, right? So to say, not only year over year, market over market, nationwide over nationwide, there's so many variables. You could just have more entry-level homes hitting the market, and then it will cause median sales prices to go down. Mm-hmm. Conversely, you could have what's kind of happening in Las Vegas and a lot of the Sun Belt. The gilded people are moving around. The entry-level people are not. They're putting off their purchases. They're staying in their rentals one more year. Like I said, if they're getting divorced and they're working-class people, they're selling their asset, and then both of them are going to rent. And I say that as an example, not to be jocular or twee or anything. It's just, that's just how it is. It's the reality of it. Divorce is death. And what's the third D? Divorce, death.
There are five. We looked them up once before. And it's diapers, divorce, diamonds, death, and
don't forget the fifth one.
Downsizing.
Downsizing, yes. So divorce is a big deal, and how people handle divorce. You know, 5 years ago when rates were pretty low, 5 years ago when rates were in the threes and median sales price was $350,000. A couple that was divorcing could each buy their own home. And now we're seeing that on our brokerage side is that maybe one's buying, the other one's renting. However,
or
the
one
sale
stays.
Or one and stays one and tries to refi. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's a great example. The other one gets a small buyout and then rents. So that all has, those generate buyers. And diapers, okay, we can make our three-bedroom home work. We don't need to upsize. We can make this apartment work. Let's wait one more year. And I think we finally kind of ran out of buyers. Now, that being said, the builders have kind of propped up that real estate market, right? Because we've been able to, we have the kind of margins where we can buy down their rates. We can offer those 2-1 buy downs. If you're a big nationwide tonnage builder, you can do forward commitments where you're giving them 30-year fixed rates at 5%. So, I mean, we help regulate the market. We give liquidity to the market when we need inventory. We shore up the market when we're worried about over inventorying, especially with the way that the builder business model has changed into, they're one part financiers and one part home builders, right? I mean, they get a huge source of revenue by selling mortgages. They get all those ancillary services. They get rebates on appliances. I mean, it really, the home is secondary, right? I mean, that the home is the financial instrument. So really has kind of helped to balance everything out. It's not a normal market where, meaning a marketplace, right, where you have buyers and sellers with equal power or equal basis, right? And, you know, there's always, someone always has a little bit more power in a market. But builders that can kind of warp that market and kind of tweak it to fit their business models. And that being said, that allows the market to be kind of a bystander and a secondary, the real estate market be kind of a secondary effect. So they worry about their quarter and their earnings. And if that means reducing starts, that means reducing starts. If that means we have no inventory in 6 months or a year, that's exactly what happened during COVID. They pulled all their starts, even homes they had permits on, they weren't actually built.
Catches up with them.
Seven months later, we had one of the biggest inventory crunches in ever.
Yep, because you can't build it in a day. And you can't foresee what's coming, but you pull back on those starts, and it's actually a repercussion that we're going to feel in 6 months.
It shockwaves down. Exactly. And then on that scale, because it was nationwide, every builder ramped up at the same exact time, and now Whirlpool or GE's looking at you going, I don't have dishwashers. We didn't make enough dishwashers for you to triple your housing starts.
Well, at the time, we were, right.
And then they had issues making them, but they also had a spike in demand. It was just a perfect storm. So that being said, I do feel that the back half of quarter three has felt more normal than at any point this year. I definitely feel the balance coming in. I see homes coming off the market that maybe had been languishing. I see homes coming on and coming off quickly or more quickly. And I definitely see locally, and like I say, we're a good microcosm for the rest of the country. Locally, our pending sales are up. Inventory is down. New listings down. Because again, the news is out. The cat's out of the bag. It became headlines in March. This is nothing new. We're 5 or 6 months on in knowing that this is a buyer's market. So if your tenant wants to re-up for next year, let them re-up. Sell it 26 if you really want to sell it. Again, it forces people, and I hate to say it, hey, we were going to get divorced. We can't sell our house. So let's get along for another year. You know what I mean? And it happens. I can speak from experience.
Real,
I've been in those situations. Yeah.
But so days on the market is up. We know that. But I know we keep talking about buyer's market versus seller's market. And I have clients that we work with who think that because we're in a buyer's market, they get this opportunity. I'm going to ask for concessions. I'm going to ask for this and that. And while, yes, there is definitely an incline toward a buyer's market, I wouldn't say that we're solidly there yet. I still feel like, there's all signs are showing, and yes, we know we're moving in that direction. But if you go in too bullish on some of these deals, we see them blow up because people think they can own the market. I'm the buyer. I get to make the decisions now. But there's still a mindset that is slowly hanging on to the idea that sellers get to, in some capacity, control. So it's kind of it almost feels like an awkward flush right now, because we know we're talking about the buyers as being in power positions, though there are still a lot of sellers that that are setting the market. So it's and builders, obviously, that are setting the market. So it's a limited buyer's market yet. I think it'll open up from that more. What do you think of? What's your take?
I agree. It's definitely location sensitive, product sensitive, and price point sensitive. So if you're looking in a drive to qualify area, anywhere in the country, where there's a lot of new construction, and the median sales price in your county is $350,000, and these homes are $375,000, let's say they're just a touch over the median, and you're in a drive to qualify zip code, looking at a lot of new construction or next to new homes, you probably have a lot of power there, because the only people that are on the market are people that at this point probably really, really, really want to sell. And builders don't build homes to sit on them. So builders always want to sell, right? I want to sell every one of our homes. And that's representative in how I price them. That's representative in how I negotiate and how our sales team engages with buyers leading up now.
How we start them, when we start them, all of those things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And starting those conversations with builders ready, builders motivated. Okay. So if you like the house, it's worth coming out and looking at it, because you're probably going to be pretty happy with the terms. Because I'm a seller. I have to sell these homes. I have no interest in setting the comps anymore. You know, that was a 2021, 2022, 23 even version of the company that doesn't exist, but we're doing more than ever. We're building more rooftops than ever. So I really don't care. I don't care what market we're in, as long as I know what I'm in, and then I know how to make decisions and kind of strategize.
Yeah. And advise, you know, it's as a builder to be able to make the decisions about starts and sells and prices and all of those things. Obviously that's informing, but also to be able to advise. I mean, a lot of people look to you as an expert and look to our experience in the industry as, you know, an advice platform. And so being able to have our thumb on the pulse in a way that lets us offer productive and qualified advice. Right?
Yeah, as good as we can, right? I mean, we've been in situations where you're giving advice and then they pull the trigger a month later and your advice is completely outdated. I'm thinking in terms of like a seller.
And so that's the thing. Yeah.
It does change quickly. And something you told them in, well, we had a situation.
Yes.
Something we told them in February.
And it did this spring change quickly. We watched the sands shift right under our feet as we stood there. Wait a minute, what is happening? And so advice that we had given to our clients at that point, we had to really, wait a minute.
You had to backtrack a little bit.
How many conversations have we had to have like that, where we had to re-explain where we're at and why we are here and how we need to now, you know, reprice their home or whatever it is.
Or reset their expectations at minimum. So, So I think that's, so to answer your question, are we in a buyer's market? It certainly feels like one, but ultimately this is going to go against every economist, because they would say buyers set the market. I think in real estate, sellers set the market, because for all the reasons I mentioned before, they're static. The inventory is relatively fixed. If you look at how many households there are, hundreds of thousands of households in Las Vegas, and we build about 12,000 houses a year. That is a tiny fraction of the amount of housing stock. Now, the amount of housing that changes hands, currently nationwide, about 30% of available homes are new construction. So we are really overrepresented. We're overrepresented in new construction.
So when you say sellers, I think to be specific, builders
correct,
are the selling standard that sets the market, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And I think that, especially as in markets that are even more fixed, like the Northeastern Seaboard, certain zip codes, there are certain areas of Las Vegas that have not seen growth for 10 years in terms of new rooftops. There are certain areas that people have to live in for family, for work, for whatever. We're already seeing that in our cities. Denver has been seeing that for about 15 years. Certain areas that there's no more growth there. You got to drive to qualify and hope you can negotiate a great deal there. Most of the East Coast, those are more fragmented markets. So it's really hard to say where one ends and the other begins. But the sellers, meaning the individual sellers, set the price. And I would tell, when I was really heavy in my brokerage business, tell a buyer, look, you can either get the house you want or the deal you want. There's just very unlikely that those two things are going to line up perfectly. So if you're ready to make if you're ready to make concessions on that noisy street, on the fact that the school bus stops there or the crosswalk, you can't leave your house from 2:45 to 3 because there's so much school traffic. If you're okay to make those concessions, but there's a reason this house has been passed over, And that's a great point to your, you know, the great, great callback to your other point is just because you see it 58 days in the market, where in the first time in 5 years, perfectly fine homes are sitting for 50 to 60 days. We have some new builds of our own that are on the market that I don't think have any reason to be sitting, except the market is soft and there's more competition.
Yeah. And that's the average days on market.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have this particular home that I'm worried about, but I have to remember we're barely at the average days on market. And if you look at the price point the house is at in the high 1 millions, we're certainly not anywhere near the average days on market. So they've been making major price decisions. That's why I'm done with my price adjustments on that house forever. I'll sit on the house.
Yep.
I will sell every other piece of inventory before I sell that house. I cannot go any lower and I will not go any lower. Doesn't mean that if someone came in and wrote something. Yeah, of course, if the deal makes sense, but advertising marketed price, that's where it's at. 1679 is where that house is staying forever.
Yeah. Which kind of goes back to my point. So it's that, yes, homes are sitting for longer. So somebody who comes in as a buyer, now they walk in and go, oh, this house has been sitting for so long. I'm going to come in and ask for this and ask for that and chunk the price and take this off. And it must be, you don't have that kind of leverage yet.
Right.
We're in a slower market, days of market.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily give a buyer the leverage to walk in and think they own the deal or that they can, you know, sweep the rug out from underneath our sellers.
Exactly.
It's that builders have the inventory, and so they're willing to negotiate a little bit more, though it's still not quite, it doesn't allow for you to run in with a bullish attitude and expect that you're going to get, you know, served up with the best deals out there. So it's kind of a strange thing. It's just slower. It's slower.
And it's
market sensitive, right? Entry level, luxury. I mean, our luxury market, we know, is even longer than that 60 day. Mm-hmm.
And there's more inventory in it because people like myself, you know, our company operates in that space. And there's some other competitors that we have that do not maybe the number of rooftops that we do, but definitely are adding to that. It's happening in our South Shore Country Club with that product. There's another spec builder that has two in there, and one guy has one. He's a one-off, more of a construction company than a home builder, and I think there's a distinction. You know, we're really the only true home builder in that country club, but there are there are construction companies building spec homes. So, because that's their margins are there, it's easier when you're a smaller outfit to build in a luxury space versus doing subdivisions with 100 houses. Those are big ticket items on utilities and infrastructure and the land cost. Everything's just a lot, you know, big boy numbers. So
yeah,
we cut twofold. We have competition.
Yeah.
The resale homes generally in that 1.9 to 2.9 are also very nice. Some of them are relics, depending on where you're building. Some of them were really nice in 2004. Maybe not so much now.
And they need work. So you go in at 1.9 and have to do a teardown. I mean, we're in the middle of one right now. It's a lot. It's
a lot.
Yeah.
That's the value that we bring, and that's a space I like to play in. But that is also a flooded space right now. Honestly, the middle to high ones, low twos is there's track builders that play in that space. Some of your Toll Brothers and your maybe even your Pulte's, depending on your area.
Pulte, TriPoint.
TriPoint, great. Yeah, good one. Completely forgot about that. Yeah, TriPoint loves playing
Taylor
in that
Morrison
space.
I mean, there are lots of them playing in those numbers.
Yep.
So yeah, it's not as, you know, $1 million home now is not as crazy move up as it once was, unfortunately, with prices the way that they've been. Median home price is already in the 460s. So now our $1 million home is beautiful. And I mean, I don't take anything away from it, but most of those tonnage builders are finding their way in that direction.
Yes.
Some of those luxury builders.
Enough are, right, to move the market a little bit. And that's where the margins are too. It's kind of like how they say, why do car builders build all SUVs now? Because they're high margins. And why do builders build big houses with high sales prices with over upgraded? Because I'm already here. I'm already doing all the site work. I already have all the liability. I already have all the risk. Why not shoot for the higher end of the market? Right. And we could have another episode. We outfitted our Serene spec levels and I had to make a lot of little in the moment decisions, stuff that needed to be decided now. There's certain things like appliances and cabinet specs I might tweak as the market changes, or if the market changes, or if demand is not where I hope it is. We may have to kind of entice buyers with higher trim levels, basically. But that being said, it's an evolving market, and I feel I feel a change this month, or, you know, end of August. I certainly have seen the traffic pick up. I think inventory, like I said, will kind of naturally equilibrate. And by this time next year, I think we'll see better rate environment. We're already seeing it. As the time of the recording, we're at about 6.5 right now. We got as high as 8 in 2023. We've spent a lot of times in the 7s in the last, you know, in the 2 years since we spiked. I think it was September or October 23 at 8.1% on an average 30-year fix. So we had to come all the way down
we
from
do
there.
We do see change in the horizon. I mean, there are some things that are happening politically that are anticipated to make a big shift in that world. So,
yeah. I think monetary policy, I think the Fed knows they're at least probably 100 basis points off of neutral, and that obviously won't have a direct effect on the long end of the curve and the 30-year fix, but it will certainly not hurt it. Generally, we had some rate drops last year, October, November 2024, and the 30-year fix actually went up because the market said, oh, we shouldn't be cutting right now. The inflation was still too high, like 3.2.
And then they panicked.
Exactly. They panicked. And, you know,
overcorrected.
Yeah, overcorrected, like markets always tend to do.
It confuses, you know, the industry as a whole gets a little confused, and then buyers get fearful, and then they take a step back, and they, you know, it all creates a shift in mental fear.
Correct. That's right. Buyers, like I said, markets hate uncertainty. Yeah. I hate it as a builder. I hated to buy two more lots, but I knew I might as well lean in. By the way, I got great deals on those lots because there's a lot of people who have said, let's just go ahead and try to get rid of our custom lot in Sasha. Let's go ahead and get rid of it. And because of that, I saw an opportunity, and that is the third cheapest parcel I've bought in there. Well, I bought two next to each other, but.
And they're beautiful. They're great parcels. I'm so excited.
They're flat. Yeah. They're quarter acre. They have 100 feet of golf, 120 feet of golf course
good
frontage.
Views, yes.
Good views. I'm going to put one of our tried and true single stories on there, and then a new plan that we created for it. For the other lot, and that'll add our repertoire. So it's pretty exciting. Yeah. I you just move and adapt with the market. Ultimately, we're underbuilt. I still believe that, and I cannot stop now, just because spring hurt my feelings.
Which it did. It hurt a lot of people's feelings.
It did.
This
it hurt me. Yeah. This has not been, I'm used to, you know, wind at my sails, and this has been wind at my sails, right? And it's just been, it's been gratifying to know that I can adapt in this market. The company can be solvent and company can be thriving, even in a year where almost every housing headline was negative.
Yeah.
And we can still do it. And just zig and zag. And there's
zig and zag, I love it. So that could be the theme for our Q3, a zig and zag, right?
Yeah, exactly. Change your spec level, change your pricing strategy. Not changing the overall vision of the company in terms of growth, very growth, you know, growth minded. And growth sometimes doesn't mean growth and profit. Sometimes it might mean other metrics. Do we own more lots? Do we have more finished lots? Are we getting faster? That's growth. Are we getting fewer warranty calls? Are we getting shorter punch lists at the end? Are we?
Yes. Have we tightened our process?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing an uptick in traffic before we brought you on director of marketing and we've just put them in the MLS? We would maybe show those homes once a month. And now our salespeople are showing them two or three times a week often. Now we have more of them to show. Maybe that's part of it. But I have to think, you check out our website, our marketing collateral and all that. That's growth too. And that's an important way to look at it. Not every night when you close out the till at the restaurant is going to be a record breaker, but maybe you got a good review. Maybe you had a food critic come in. I love restaurant examples because the market, you know, that business is so unforgiving and quick. You know, you might go 2 years without knowing you're doing something wrong when you're a home builder. It's going to take you a while. You know, there's some doubt that I even have on some of our floor plans. Did I do that right? Because I haven't actually seen this model successfully sell yet because I haven't built it yet. I don't know. Whereas I feel like restaurants, you kind of get that real in the moment feedback, right? So I love to use those as an example. Yeah.
I love that perspective because we have done, I mean, in the last 6 months, the amount of growth that the company has had, internal growth in our processes, in our policies, in our just tightening things up, in our collateral, in our webs, all of those things would not have been possible had we been slamming through sales and pushing in other areas. So it kind of gave us that moment of pause to redirect and focus and continue to grow. I mean, it isn't that we all took a nap. I mean, we're all continuing to work.
Yeah, we're all busy. Yeah.
Yeah, we're very busy, but a lot of that, it's a different focus on the busy, which I love that perspective because you don't really think about how much has actually been accomplished in what was otherwise not a huge selling spring.
No, it hasn't honestly been a great year overall for the company. I mean, in terms of if you looked at us, if we were a publicly traded company, they don't care about your new website. They don't care about the fact that what we're building today will carry us through 26, 27 sellers markets, right? We're going to have that infrastructure built up.
Yeah.
Exactly. So when I look at that, and also necessity is the mother of invention, we would have had to, we had to be better at marketing. It didn't have the luxury of throw it in the MLS with some renderings. They call either me or, you know, someone on my team and we go out and show it. If they like it, great. Put a contract together, perfect. I never had one sit done. And now we have had two this year sit done, one for about 30 days and the other one is not even sold yet. It's running in about 50, 55 days. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm encouraged by the fact that we took the year and said, all right, this has not been great. We still built. We finished. Yeah. We're finishing homes. We'll have three new rooftops hitting the market. That's good or bad. I don't know.
Think of how much time and effort you've been able to apply to the other projects, to the Serene backend, to the Westridge backend. I mean, it's given you really projects that you are, you know, we're loading up for next year. But would you have had the bandwidth to be everywhere? Probably not. I mean, I don't know. You manage a lot, but sometimes I'm like, are you like cloned? How do you get this all done?
God, I hope there's only one of me. I can't imagine. You know, you're right. We pulled a parcel out of the master plan and rezoned it from public space to residential and pushed the
density and required so much of your, you know, mental bandwidth and time and energy.
Totally. And meetings with the landowner. And then we did a JV with the landowner. We had all this, you know, that we did all that in 6 months.
Engineers,
city council, planning commission, all these things. We could have easily had that drag on for 9 months to a year. They did it in six. And I have to believe it's because I was able to focus on it and I wasn't pulled in 100 different directions. And those dividends you won't get for a year. You know, we won't feel that for end of 26 on some of them, early 27 on others. I mean, it's something that's not instant gratification. That's why I said you can be doing the wrong thing for 2 years as a home builder before you even realize, that wasn't a good direction to take the product line in. That wasn't a good, you know, policy to have with buyers, you know, whatever it is, you don't necessarily know. You don't get that kind of instant feedback.
So in summary, Q3 has been...
In summary, Q2, I would say, was the worst because it was new. The feelings were new. Ooh, this is not just a weird winter.
Just confused and unsure. And is the sky falling?
Yeah, exactly. And we got through that fear in Q2. And I feel like Q3 has kind of thawed a little bit. We still have enough inventory. I feel like the average seller is going to have 90 to 180 days before they'll give up, whether they're overpriced, whether they're hard to negotiate with, whether their house is inferior in some way. Mm-hmm. I think that we've kind of weeded through some of those people that maybe were April 15th listing. Now we're 4.5 months on and you've had no activity, no traffic, no offers, no anything. And eventually that seller says, you know what, maybe we really don't need to sell. Maybe we'll put our move on hold. Maybe we'll put a tenant in there again or whatever. So I think that the theme for Q3 is equilibrium. Q4, I think we'll see the 10-year treasury has been doing really well, meaning going down. So I think we'll continue to see rates fall. We're, like I said, we're below 6.5 right now, which sounds like a lot, but I mean, considering we spent a lot of last year in the 7s, It's a lot. I mean, 1%. Think about if we were at 5.5, how we'd be doing, we'd be dancing in the street. So we don't celebrate 7.5 to 6.5. We should be. That's a huge difference. I mean, that you look at a $700,000 loan amount, 1% of that's $7,000 a year. It's an extra $600 a month just from 7.5 to 6.5. Of course, that same logic applies from 6.5 to 5.5. So I get it. Where do you stop it? I just think we should maybe count our victories. And I get it. I think part of the problem is that when buyers' feel rates are going down or trending down, it actually freezes the market a little bit more, even though rates are better than they were 6 months ago or 3 months ago. But they feel like, well, if they've done a 6.5, do I really want to go through all that and then have to refi again in a year anyway? So we're just sorting through it. I just think I don't have high expectations for 2025. This is a company. We're going to go from 1 to 4 active, completely done, ready to go, assuming none of them sell. I mean, we could end the year with 4 $2 million homes. It's not a great feeling, but I've grappled with it already.
I mean, it's, especially given how uncertain things have been, I think just kind of a wrap up and a, what is it? What has it been? What does it look like? I think a lot of people are sort of still figuring it out and treading their way through this without a lot of understanding about actually what has transpired and what's sort of in the mix of where we're going. So big terms, and I know we talk about it a lot, but the news and social media and the fear and you just to cut through all of that and hear a real perspective of boots on the ground, what's really happening out here is helpful.
Right, right. People are busy and they got their own lives. They have soccer practice. They have work. They have family, friends. Yeah. They're doing a temperature check. They're dipping the toe in and then not thinking about it again for a couple months. So that's why it just takes time. Once the news goes sour, it takes a long time for that faith to come back and the confidence to come back. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people have to feel it because as a broker, I've been through a couple of these cycles in 11 years and it takes a minute, right, for people to get that out of their head that, oh, the market's not going to crash because the strip is closed down and people are wearing masks. It just took a minute. And honestly, it really wasn't until the early part of 21 that we saw the biggest spike in buyer demand. And rates had been low for most of 2020. So we can't just blame the rates. Yeah. And homes were sitting there were homes that were sitting for a long time in 2020. There was not, it was not, we remember it that way, but towards the back half of the year, it did get better, but it wasn't a frenzy until 21, 22. And rates have been down for about 8-9 months. So it just showed you how long it takes for sentiments to change.
For sure. Or they're fearful of something else. There's something in the political climate or eggs prices have gone up. There are other things, other factors that have happened in our world, in our universe in recent year that people are like, oh, you can't afford a house now because the grocery store is expensive. And they're just kind of sitting on the sidelines making these, what do they call that? Like a
preconceived notion,
quarterback, right?
Armchair quarterback. Exactly.
All the plays that you're not really in the game on, but they're not willing to step into the game to even inform themselves entirely about what is exactly happening in this industry and how it's changing, or what leverage they do have as a buyer, a build, seller, whatever.
Yeah. And they don't think about the fundamentals of real estate as an asset class. It's just the bottom line is these are not cars. These aren't even precious metals. These are homes. I mean, they have 3D, they're 3D structures. They have emotion. They have feeling. They create the city. I mean, there's no city without houses. It's something so fundamental to restaurants can fall and fail. Tech companies can fail. But at the end of the day, real estate as an asset class is just not, it's just too resilient and it's too rigid. And it's got not nearly enough elasticity in it that would have, this kind of instability that people associate with the stock market or cryptocurrency or whatever.
Right.
Or even the car market.
Those are all topics that have played into some of the narratives that we've heard,
Exactly.
Like I said, the eggs and random things that pop in, people just associate. It's not necessarily. And if you average it out or look out over the entire scheme of the real estate market, it's always performed. It has, if you can hold on to it, if you can keep it, it has and, you know,
in general,
proven itself over time
of
as
course,
a earning
a robust asset class, because it can also be
robust,
you know,
asset.
Can
there
be
it is. Yeah,
utilized. It has utility. It has. You can borrow against it. I mean, there's just so much that it has to offer. Of course, it's location. If you buy something in inner city Detroit, of course, it's very not every investment, real estate investment has been a great, has been a winner. But overall, if you're swimming with the current, right, and everyone's moving to the Sun Belt and everyone's moving to low tax burden states and everyone's moving to suburbia. I mean, let's face it. We did a walkability episode a couple months ago. It's not taking off. It just isn't. Suburbia is where it's at. If you're investing in suburbia, you're not investing in these Surfside condos in Miami that have taken a beating. I mean, if you're swimming with the current and you're buying single family residential or townhomes, you know, something where you kind of control the earth you're on, generally you're pretty safe. And it might not be the best. Exactly. It might not be the best.
Maybe not always as an investment, but as a home,
right.
you can't go wrong, you know. Well, good.
All right.
So that's what's going on in Q3. A lot, but not really.
No.
More just information.
How do we feel? How do we think buyers feel? How do other agents feel? And how do other builders feel? It's all kind of plays into it.
It does, for sure. For sure. Well, thank you.
All right.
Appreciate your time.
Sounds good.
And we'll be back soon. So you guys tune in again next time. We will look forward to seeing you then. And we'll have more great topics, more great insight, more great information. And look forward to an opportunity to chatting with you then. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into the Trust the Process podcast. Make sure to follow us on Spotify to stay in the loop with the latest insights, project updates, and everything in between. See you next time.